Okay, well, welcome everybody. Thank you for joining our FS 101 conference call. I'd like to acknowledge I'm hosting this from the traditional territory of the Kwamlyn-Dun First Nation and Tawn-Kwa'chin Council. And I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy days, because I know with recreation, everybody's doing reports from last year that are due probably the end of April and trying to get funding in place and get summer programs up and running. So it gets to be a very busy time of year, so thank you for joining us. And just an update, Nathan and Kumnapik, you might remember Trista telling us last week how she came back and their roof had collapsed on their recreation facility, and she said she thinks that it might be fixed by next week rather than a couple of months down the road. So that's some more good news today. So let's get rolling with our call. We'll have lots of time for you guys to chat because we have a small group. And we'll roll from there. So I'd like to start by thanking you for sharing your ideas about how to better or more creatively use spaces or places in your community that weren't well used. So you had some really great ideas. I didn't reply to everybody. I was hoping that you guys would read each other's and get an idea of what some of the ideas are that are out there. You had ideas around repurposing buildings and some of the not so well used spaces. And I think the great thing about doing that, like Kumnapik, you were talking about, you know, some of the outdoor spaces that weren't used so much anymore. And I think when you can repurpose or make some of those spaces usable again, you might get people participating in recreation that don't come to an arena or to a community hall or a school gym or things like that. So that's the neat thing about being really creative with how we use our spaces and places. I noticed, Kumnapik, yourself and Scott, you guys had a little bit of a conversation in the forum last week, which was great. And Scott had asked you, why do you think these outdoor spaces aren't used as much anymore? And Scott was referring to Kumnapik talking about basketball and ball hockey courts and two old ships outside his community. And I think that question that Scott asked is always a good question for all of us in recreation to ask is, you know, when you're out in your community, look around and if there's spaces that you think aren't used that much, how could you use them for recreation? And just be really creative and think outside the box or outside the arena or outside the pool. So today on our call, what we're going to do is focus on outdoor spaces and ways in which we can encourage others to get out on the land and connect with nature. And I know that in the North, that's a really important priority for everybody who lives in the North, and especially for Indigenous populations who've spent the millennia, like millions of years or thousands and thousands of years out on the land and being connected with the natural world around us. So, but before we get into this week's content, let's do some introductions. And the order of our introductions, I think, Trista, you'll pop in the chat. So we'll go Trista, and then Gian, David, Kumnapik, and Nathan. And if anyone else joins them, we'll add them into that circle. And I'll keep changing the order each time we go around. So what I'd like to do for the introductions is I just want you to reflect a little bit on what encourages you to connect with land and nature. So I'll start so I don't put Trista on the spot. Well, and actually I guess Deanne, you'll be next because Trista will be popping her response in the chat because she's in a busy office. So here's my question in the chat. My question again is, what encourages you to get out on the land and connect with nature? And so I'll go, Trista, you pop in the chat, then we'll go Gian, David, Kumnapik, and Nathan. So as you guys know, my name's Caroline, and I love getting outdoors because I like that feeling of fresh air in my lungs when I'm outside. And I was just outside for the last hour with my granddaughter just poking around and looking at pine cones and things like that. But I just like that feeling of fresh air. And when I'm out on the land or the bush, that feeling about that encourages me to go outdoors, and it makes me feel energized and invigorated. And mentally, I feel calmer and more relaxed. So for me, being outdoors, I think, is really good for my physical and mental health. So, Trista, I'll let you pop in the chat. And, Deanne, what encourages you to get out on the land or connect with nature? And I know you grew up in a very different place than some of us.
Hey everyone, this is Jan from Squash. Land and outdoors are, I'm well connected with that. My father is from a farmer family. I'm from farmer's family, so we are very attached with the land and the ground, and it's always good to be close to the nature. It always feels like you're alive, right? You know, like in the some artificial world or living on the some caged environment. It's nature is like it gives you like a healthy life, and you can utilize that healthy life or the being close to the nature to keep everyone like yourself as well as the people around you healthy by creating the space. Like you can like you play sports, you know, you can do lots of activities by being close to the nature, right? Getting water from the river or water, getting water from the lake, you know, and doing some plow work or doing some field work on the ground. That's how you can keep yourself and you can utilize the area. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Kia. Over to you, David. Is there something that encourages you to, like, get out on the land or connect with nature?
Yeah, my nerves.
Okay. So is it calming, relaxing?
Absolutely. What I was thinking about was my history with nature and the time when I was living in Vancouver, and I went out and I started singing "Hello, My Old Friend" as I got back into it. And that's what nature is for me. It's an old friend. I talk to the trees. I talk to the animals. They talk to me. It really is a friendship that has developed over my life.
That's a really nice way of putting it. Thank you. That's a close connection because lifelong friendships are really important. So thank you. Let's go to Kumanatik and then Nathan. And I think that was Juliana who just joined the call. So Kumanatik, for yourself, and I know that it's part of your, you know, your traditions and your culture and everything, but are there things that are special for you that really encourage you or tell you it's time to get out on the land and be outdoors?
Yeah. Okay. I am Kumanatik Nitya from Iqaluit, Nunavut. And what encourages me to go out on the land is and connect with nature is to go eat food, hunting, traditional food, soul food, whether it be seals, caribou, or walrus, and eat fresh meat.
Yeah, so it's good for your it's good for your health and your well-being and for your soul, right? When you can collect and gather food around you that comes right from the land, and I think that's yeah, that's great. Thank you. And I loved your story for anyone who missed it about the snow buntings and the eggs. So thanks for sharing that. Nathan, over to you. And again, I know you talked a lot about, you know, even things like just going and catching the little fish from the Three Tunnels Creek or things like that. But what really encourages you to get out on the land and connect with the outdoors or your natural spaces?
Hi, sorry, I'm working from home right now, but since I'm from Baker Lake, the only inland community, the people really rely on caribou. People call us the caribou Inuit. It's our livelihood. We always catch caribou in case the caribou do not come, right? There were starvation periods in the 60s, so Inuit around here, probably everywhere, know about suffering, but I'd say Inuit go hunting when the caribou come. Like, you stop what you're doing. You just drop everything. If you're working on a cabin, you drop your tools, put them away, and then go hunting because you never know when they're going to come back.
So do they come at different times of the year? Or is it usually, like for us in the north of the Yukon, it's usually in the fall, right? So do they come through your community earlier in the year, or when is it?
Yeah, they always migrate. The Beverly herd, the largest herd in Canada, they go through the Ceylon River and Kazan River, right by Baker Lake. But once in a while, like they'll go right through the coast and bypass the town completely. And some years you have to go more than 100 miles to go catch caribou. So it's, and other years they're like on your backyard. You gotta keep them away from the runways. Planes don't land. They become a nuisance sometimes. But in other years, there's nothing.
That's a big shift. Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that. I appreciate that. It's interesting to understand what, how the land changes our patterns of living and how it also affects how people recreate, right? Because when there's times when you need to gather your food, obviously things like hockey and stuff like that get set aside. So it's important to understand those cycles. I think, Juliana, was that you that joined the call from the area code 819?
Yeah, it's me.
Hi. So we're asking the question, what encourages you to get out on the land and connect with nature?
Well, yeah, nature is also from where I'm from. It's our source of life, right? It's where we're going to work on the land to get our food from, where we're going to get the kids out to play. When the kids are sick, we say they just need to go to the river. They just need to get out in the nature to get back their energy. So we also have this connection with the land.
That's great. Thanks. And it's interesting that you've traveled so far, moved so far away, but still feel those connections wherever you go in the world, I think. So thank you. And Isabel, I noticed that you jumped on the call, but it looks like you're driving, so I'm not sure if it works for you to unmute or if you just prefer to listen.
I'm going to have just to listen. I am indeed driving.
Okay. We want you to drive safely, so just have a listen to the call as long as it works for you. So, yes, no distracted driving, right? Okay, well, thanks, everybody. So as I mentioned, this week, this learning event invites you to explore the importance of connecting people around you to nature through recreation. And I think that that's a natural thing that we do in the North, but sometimes there's times where it's easier to be inside and we want to find ways to get outdoors. The connection between nature and recreation is the third goal of the Framework for Recreation in Canada. You might remember us talking about that framework a long time ago, like before Christmas. So it is an important priority across the country. And it's interesting to see how it's maybe different for us in rural communities and remote communities or in the north. But as you all have explained, a connection to nature offers not only physical benefits, but also mental, emotional, and spiritual benefits. And it's good for people of all ages. So we know that people connect with nature in different ways. Some people like to be physically active. Some people it's hunting and gathering. Other people, maybe it's through art or with their family or friends or on their own. And we know that we need to promote this understanding of the importance of nature to well-being and to the development of children. And some cultures do that more naturally and it's more integrated into their culture than it is for other people. So, you know, depending on where you live in your community, you may have like newcomers to your community or people who've lived in cities before. That might need your help in that connecting. So when I think another reason for connecting people to nature through recreation is that that closer connection also encourages people to provide more care for their environment. and to use them sustainably in ways that we can continue using them for many generations to come. And so those are some important reasons why in recreation we want to take the time to think about how we do even our recreation that's outside of our day-to-day living, and how we still build in connections to the land that way too. So I guess another thing that I was thinking about is that we have certain sort of resources across the country to help us connect people to nature. And so you may have seen some of these on slides 15 to 19 on the presentation. There was a Nature for All, which is a short Parks Canada video, and the Nature Playbook, which is a Canadian Parks Council resource. So I know these resources were developed nationally, and sometimes things that are developed nationally work for us in rural, remote, and northern communities, and sometimes not. So I'm just wondering, if you had time to look at the resources, was there anything that you saw in there that was relevant to your work in recreation? Or what was a key message that stood out for you? And if you haven't had time to look at the resources, just tell me pass. That's totally okay. I don't mind whatsoever. So let's start our circle rather than with Ian this time. I'll start with David and then Kumanopic, Nathan, Juliana. Isabel's listening and Trist has popped in the chat. So David, did you get a chance to look at those resources or not yet?
Yes, no, I did look at those resources and I thought they were very good. And one of the things that stood out for me was, and it's illustrated on slide 17 and in the, I think it was in the Nature Playbook that I thought as well. I can't remember which of the resources. It could have been in the video Nature for All, but in either case, is the ADHD, the attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Let's just say I'm aware of some people that have that, and I also see that they're not getting out into nature. And I remember myself when I was in primary school, the teachers were saying, he's never paying attention. And I kept saying, well, you're boring. I was more interested in what's going on outside with the woodpecker than what the teacher had to say. And while I personally have never been diagnosed with ADHD, I can say that nature has definitely enabled me to reduce stress, remain calm, remain focused. Many of these things that are on slide 17, I have a great immune system, I heal rapidly. I can't say enough for what nature has done for me throughout my life. So I can't imagine anybody living without it. You know, the people who live in the cities, and, you know, we mentioned this last time, the curriculums now are being developed so that at least once a week or twice a month, the kids are getting in touch with nature. It's such an important element in helping people become adjusted in their life to a proper position. I don't know how best to say it.
Yeah, that, I think that that's great to, you know, recognize that importance of weaving it through what we do, whether it's our day-to-day life or whether it's the programming that we do or the classrooms or things like that. So thank you for sharing that, David. Kumanopic, did you get a chance to look at the resources? And don't feel bad if you didn't, because we're all really busy right now. But if you did, was there anything that stood out for you?
This one, Nature's Playbook, sister publication, Connecting Canadians with Nature, an investment of well-being of our citizens, 2014, that's the one that stood out for me, because it outlines the research and is an excellent resource for questions about the benefits of time and time spent in nature. All of those stood out: reduced stress, stronger immune system, lower body pressure, stable mental health, improved concentration and cognition, ADHD system prevention, improved eyesight, positive mindset, emotional and physical well-being, healing, lasting love for nature, healthy birth weights, reduced mortality, more opportunities for physical activity and calmness, and disease prevention.
That's great. Thanks, Kumanopic. And I think while you were talking about having a resource that shows what the research does and what the benefits are, one of the things that came to my mind is that if you're asking a funder for money to support a on the land program or even to support a day camp that gets kids out on the land, then you can use that resource to say research has shown that getting outdoors is not just good for physical activity, but for all these other things as well. So I think that's a really important thing to keep in mind, is that when we're asking for funding and ways of doing things, that we have that research to back us up to say why it's important. So thank you. Nathan, hopefully we didn't just take the words out of your mouth, and I'm not sure, again, feel free to pass if you haven't had a chance to look at the resources. But if you have, was there anything that you think was relevant to your community or a key message that stood out?
Yeah, everyone said a lot of good things about exactly what I was thinking. But the one thing, what was that? Something about Playbook. There was a lot of First Nations Aboriginal stories. I know it was about, like, in the bush and whatnot, but I could relate it to Inuit and being out on the land. Like, I know there are two different types of, one's a forest and one's barren land. Like, they're complete opposites, but in a lot of ways, they're very similar and identical in the way people interact with nature in the bush and in the barren lands. Like, I found it interesting that the more things change, the more they stay the same.
That's great, thanks. Because that's one thing I was wondering about is a national resource that can you see something about your own culture, your own community lifestyle in something that was created for an entire country. So it sounds like you can and read between the lines and see how that might have some relevance to you. So thanks for sharing that, because I was wondering about that. Juliana, how about yourself? If you had a chance to look at those resources, was there anything that stood out for you?
I think maybe about the part getting the kids since an early age to be connected to the nature. I think lately we are always talking about the especially in our community and the community that importance of the elders or the elders going out and still getting the first or getting resources out on the land. But the importance is because they did this since an early age. So trying to get that on the kids also. And as I have mentioned, it is how I deal with my kids. You get a stronger immune system, you get this connection since the beginning, and you're going to keep loving the nature after that.
Yeah, and I think it's just so important, and kids can use so many different senses and use their whole body and lots of different things outdoors, whereas, you know, in a classroom or in a gym, it's not quite as interactive, and I think they sleep better when they spend more time outside. So thanks for sharing that, Juliana. Trista said she'll pass on that one. And Deanne, coming back to you, if you had a chance to look at the resources, was there anything that you thought was relevant or something that stood out?
I think for me, it's very, like, we are nature. I like that line. And everything is true there. And not only what we are seeing here, like the healing, reduce stress or anything, all these benefits. There are more than that, like that's what I think about this slide.
That's great. Thank you. Thanks for sharing. Well, thanks, everybody. I think that that's, you know, it's important to look at some of those things, and like Kumanopic pointed out, I think understanding where that research comes from, I think that can really help us justify what we're doing and why we're doing it. So, you know, you might want to pull off that one page slide that a few of you have pointed out, and just be able to include that if you're doing any requests for funding that involves outdoor on the land activities. So as we know, being active outdoors, Juliana mentioned it, helping children develop and grow. Being on the land teaches and sustains your culture and language, and you pointed that out and explained how that connection is. So outdoor recreation and land-based activities are important to many cultures, and they teach respect and care for not only the environment, but also the land and the animals as well. So there's a really great website. It's an NWT website, and I don't think we have anybody on the call today from NWT, but it's called the NWT On the Land Collaborative. And you can find the link to that in the Explore More section and also on slide 23 if you have the slides open. The thing that I think is really neat about the NWT On the Land Collaborative is that it was created in 2015 to promote and support on the land initiatives in the Northwest Territories, and it brings together government, charities, corporations, and other partners so that they combine their efforts and they actually make it easier for communities in the NWT to access money and other resources for their on-the-land projects. Unfortunately, for those of us on the call, the collaborative only funds projects in the Northwest Territories. But there's some really amazing stories on there, and the stories might provide you with some ideas and inspiration for your outdoor programming. And also resources, too. So, you know, NWT is between us and the Yukon and those of you in Nunavut, and sometimes we can access resource people as well. So who we are and where we live really influences our relationship with the land and nature. I think we all recognize the outdoor opportunities that we have in northern, Arctic, rural, and remote communities. And despite some of the harsh climates that we live in, I think it is also easier for us to live out on the land compared to people who might live in a city. But it's still not easy for everyone. Juliana just mentioned elders, and I've had lots of conversations with how sometimes it's difficult for elders, or there's barriers for elders to getting out on the land. So these barriers can make it challenging sometimes. So before we move on, I'd like to ask you about what does make it difficult for people in your community to get out on the land. So let me pop the question in here. I'm going to start, Kumanopic, I'm going to ask you first, but I'll give you an example while you're thinking of your answer. So my question for you is there something that makes it difficult for people in your community to get out on the land? And let me share an example first, and then we'll go Kumanopic, Nathan, Juliana, Isabel's listening, Trista, you can pop in the chat, Deanne and David. So Beaver Creek is a really small Yukon community. It's the furthest west community in all of Canada, and it's right on the border with Alaska, and less than 100 people live there. And the school in Beaver Creek tries to take students outdoors as much as possible. But one thing that I've heard year after year is that often the children at school don't have warm socks or mitts. And it's a really big barrier. There's only 8 children in the school, but the school's already spending money on other things and can't afford to buy clothing sometimes for children. So that makes it difficult for them to go out on the land. So Kumanopic, is there one thing in your community that can make it difficult for people to get out on the land?
Yes, for us, going out on the land means going hunting. So it's mainly the cost of the living in the Arctic is the one of the difficulties in my community, go out on the land.
So is that like the cost of fuel if you're going out with a snowmobile, or
the cost of fuel, the cost of maintaining the machine, but having to buy parts.
And do you guys mostly travel on the land then in the winter when there's snow and ice rather than in the summer? Like
yeah.
It's too difficult in the summer, right?
We go through boats throughout the summer, and throughout the winter we go through snowmobiles.
So both of those are mechanical, require some fuel, require repairs, require parts that might be expensive to ship into the community. So just the access, I guess the transportation or the cost of transporting and getting yourselves out on the land is can be a barrier, especially if people have limited incomes, right?
It's on top of that, the cost of food, too. If, for instance, if we're staying out for a couple of days, we might as well bring some food, and the cost of it is pretty high as it is already.
Yeah, and especially food that you might want to pack along and you don't need a fridge or something like that for, right? So that can be, and if it's healthy food, it's often more expensive. So thanks for sharing that. Nathan, your community is different to Kuminopik's community because of the, you know, Baker Lake being the one in, what would you call it? You called it an inland community, the only one that's not on the ocean. So would you agree with Kuminopik as far as what the transportation makes it difficult, or do you notice something else that makes it difficult for your people or for people in your community to get out on the land?
Yeah, Nathan, I'm the direct coordinator for Baker Lake. Yeah, it's the same thing in Baker as about the cost of everything being so expensive. But now that Agnico Eagle Gold Mine's been here for at least 10 years now, more than 10 years actually, everyone's been working for all those times, so there's been like 3% unemployment, so money really isn't an issue anymore. Everyone's got snowmobiles, everyone's got boats and motors and whatnot, but the one problem people seem to complain about a lot now is lack of snow. Grass sticking out, because we're the only inland community. We go through everything through on the land. We don't travel on the ice or on the ocean. We go through hills, and there's rocks everywhere now. Grass sticking out of the snow. We used to get 10, 20 feet of snow where we used to dig up out of our house, and now, if we're lucky, we'll get 2 feet of snow. So lack of snow is our biggest problem now in Baker Lake inland community. Like you said, a lot of rocks.
Well, and of course, you're not like us in the Yukon where we have lots of trees. So if it snows just 2 feet and then it blows, the trees can catch the snow and it doesn't just blow away, whereas I imagine for you guys it can blow forever and ever. So that's something that's really hard to change is the whole climate change and how the weather patterns change. So thanks for pointing that one out too. Juliana, how about yourself? You know, thinking about your community, is there one thing that makes it difficult for people to get out on the land?
I think that it's maybe lately the same reason why people not take more time to exercise, the same time to take care of themselves. I think it's about distraction, about lots of options, lots of, I know that we are living in a different world also, and when those options, they seem more comfortable, like in a short way of think about it. Like when I was thinking with the kids, they had a place where the kids were just playing video games. And then, like, yeah, when they leave school, do they want to go get dressed, get warm, put all their gear on, or they want to just cross the street and get sitting on the video game and play? I think it's just about all the options that is being offered. And I think it's now that it's our job to keep reminding people all the benefits from going out on the land. And then I think once you get into, you remember it, and then you get that feeling like when you start exercise, and then you want to keep going. I think it's just we need just to keep reminding people about how great it is.
Yeah, and I think those habits, I think what you're saying is the habits of getting outdoors, even if it's in the playground or in the street or out in front of a house or the schoolyard, those habits, if you form them when they're young enough, they carry through over life. Like I still remember Nathan talking about the fish and when you were a child, and that's something that's still important. So, yeah, sometimes getting out on the land is more work. Like Kumanopic talked about, you know, getting motorized things fixed, getting gas, buying food, being prepared, even just getting dressed versus going to play video games. So for sure, thank you for sharing that. Trista, I'll let you pop in. Oh, you've got that there. Okay, great. I'll just say Trista mentioned fuel costs being expensive too. So even though you're close to local spots, I remember you mentioning how close your cabin is. There's still travel, right? You still have to have fuel and you still have to be prepared and things like that. So thank you. Gian, and then we'll go to David. So Gian, is there anything that makes it difficult for people in your community to get out on the land? And you can think about from where you grew up, or you can think about your new home here in Whitehorse. So whichever one.
I would say about Yukon. So the one thing I would say... the knowledge of the nature, or like the knowledge of the places, right? So, knowing like where to go and how to go, like the, you know, what are the difficulties are there, like related to like the moose, how moose can be dangerous, or how bear can be dangerous or something, like that's what, and what I see, like, I'm from India and my friend from India, I don't see anyone going in the nature, even not going for the walk or doing anything. So if, I don't know, this is not related to the topic, but, exposure to the nature, somehow they get exposed to the nature, go into, like in the summer only, they go to just do camping and this stuff, but not like in the winter and this stuff. So a big exposure of nature to them also, can help them get them into the nature. Yeah,
and I think what you're pointing out is very especially true for Whitehorse, right? So, if you think about Iqaluit or Baker Lake, you've got people in those communities that it's an indigenous way of lifestyle, it's an Inuit way of lifestyle of being on the land, and how to do it safely and how to do it well and how to be prepared is something that people teach, elders teach younger generations, parents teach their children. Whereas if you look at Whitehorse, we have a lot of people that have moved into Whitehorse from somewhere else. And you're exactly right. I think, maybe people venture out in the summer, but they think it's too cold in the winter, or they're worried about getting hurt or getting lost, or that it's dark, or how to use bear spray, those sorts of things. So, I think that you're right, and I think it just depends on your community and who the people are in your community. So thanks for pointing that out. David, how about yourself? Would you agree with Deanne, or do you see anything else that might make it difficult for people in your community of Whitehorse to get out on the land?
Well, I agree with Deanne initially, in terms of if we look at the population dynamics of Whitehorse, it's growing. It's had a rapid growth. Most of the people that have moved to Whitehorse seem to have come from southern places where they're not used to getting out on the land. And at the same time, I agree with Kumanopic and Trista in terms of transportation being an issue. And the other thing that I see as an issue is the perception of it's dangerous. Not that the nature itself is dangerous, but that the parents are saying to children, I want you to come straight home from school. Because even though Whitehorse is not a big city, we have big city issues and big city fears. So we have overprotective parents that themselves weren't exposed to nature as children, imposing that on their children, and so you have a snowball effect. And lack of transportation. You know, there's a number of issues in there. And, of course, I have to agree with Guillaume again in terms of so many people are afraid of bears and this kind of thing, when from my perspective, like I said earlier, they're just my friends, you know. So it's really a perception thing more than it is a physical thing, because we have nature right at our back door every day.
Thanks, David. Thanks for sharing that. And I find it's really interesting because you get a good sense of your communities when you describe things like some of the challenges, and then you understand, once you sort of look at that, where some of the opportunities are. So, you know, I really believe that, you know, you guys are committed to making a difference in your communities, and that you understand the value of being active outdoors on the land and recognize some of the challenges that are there and are thinking of ways that you can overcome them. I truly believe that as a recreation leader, it's our responsibility to improve people's quality of life. And it's not always easy to do that. It takes time, effort, good planning, and, of course, resources like money and fuel and people and things like that. So when it comes to encouraging people to connect with nature, what you want to do is to start with what you can do. Even a small action, like Juliana mentioned, of encouraging the kids to go outside for 20 minutes rather than going over onto the screen time, that might seem like a small action, but it can start to make ripples in the pond. So if you sort of close your eyes, I just want you to imagine, I don't know if the ice is melting where you are yet or not, maybe where Tristan is, but not for us just yet, but if you imagine after the ice is melted and you're looking at a pond and you have a little pebble in your hand, and imagine that you drop that pebble in the pond, and at first there's a little splash, but then you notice that a ripple grows, and it grows and it spreads and it ripples throughout the pond. So our job, I think, as recreation leaders is to find just one or two pebbles. We don't have to find big, huge rocks, but we need one or two pebbles. And when we drop them in that pond and we start to take little actions and do little things, we eventually can make a difference across the entire pond or the entire community, if you want to think of it that way. So that's kind of my philosophical ending to our call today. But that also brings me to the last question that I have for you as we wrap up our call. And so my last question for you is, as a recreation leader, what's one thing, even if it's a really small pebble, what's one thing that you can do to help others in your community connect with land and nature? And I'm going to start with Nathan this time, and then go Juliana, Guillaume, David, and Kumanopic, and Trissy can pop in the chat as well. So, Nathan, if you think about it, and I've heard you say a number of things, so I've got a few things in my mind, but I'm going to ask you, what's one thing that you can do in your community to help people connect with land and nature? Just a small thing.
It's all right. I forgot I was on mute.
So that's okay.
Something that Baker Lake can do to get people out on the land. Talk, or, because I remember there was this person who had this little thing on this bird. I forget what, I think it was a falcon or an eagle or something. And it was flying from America up to Canada. And it kept flying around between Baker Lake and Rankin, and it was weird. Everyone in Baker got all excited, and, oh, I should go out hunting near there, see if I can see it. Like, and it was just a little, I guess, trending, or it was just on Facebook, but I couldn't believe all these people got excited and wanted to go out hunting or just to, and I'm like, yeah, you're never going to see this bird. Like, yeah, it's cool seeing it on Facebook, but like, people want to go out actually, like, just because of the story about this falcon or eagle or something, but it was trending on Facebook. It was cool.
So in other words, if you can find neat little things to get people excited about going outdoors, that might help.
Yeah, yeah. Just neat little tidbits, or like this one falcon eagle that people were keeping track of made people want to go out. People from Rankin and Baker, like,
yeah,
viewing from them. But I guess it was just because it was interesting, something different. I don't know.
Yeah, it was outside of its range and didn't belong there.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Oh, that's neat. That's an interesting way of thinking about it, is something unique or different that gets people excited. So thanks for that, Nathan. Juliana, for yourself, you've spoken a lot about children. So, you know, what's one small action that you try and do? Like, you've talked about trying to encourage change, but what's an actual action that you might do or take to help others in your community connect with the land and nature?
I think it's providing the resource to make sure that they can get out. Sometimes I for those that know Cambridge Bay, it's, we are also at the water, but you go to the river, people usually go fishing. We need to have a transportation, and there are lots of people in our community that don't use. So sometimes we try to get together to provide public transportation for families and kids to explore a little bit more. So I think like from us from the municipality, this should be our mission and always in our mind and one of our main goals.
Yeah, and I think that that's a good one to try and overcome those barriers, especially because, you know, the people who don't have the transportation are probably the people that would benefit a lot from getting outdoors. So I know in the Yukon we have, like, a swan watching time for the month of April, and there's actually a free bus that takes people out to where you can see the swans, where the Yukon River runs out of Marsh Lake. So you know, that free transportation, and they do a really good job advertising it. So thanks for pointing that out, Juliana. Trista's popped in the chat that she tries to plan group activities that use local spots, so outdoor spots, and encourage participation with small prizes. Always a good thing. I like giving people things that they can wear outdoors, like a buff or a toque or a pair. We actually sometimes with our take about socks or things like that too. So thanks, Trista. Guyanne, how about yourself? What would be one thing that you could do in your community? And it might not be through what you do for work, but maybe it's with people that you know to help others get outdoors and connect with the land and nature. I can't hear you right now. I'm not sure if that's me or you. Yeah, I still can't hear you. Oh, there we go.
No, that was me saying I can't hear him either.
Okay, well, let's hang on for a second. Let's go to David. So I'll ask you, David, and then we'll come back around to you, Gian. David, what's one thing you can do to help others in your community connect with nature?
Program for it. So, for example, pardon me, I'm going to be offering a program, Walk with a Naturalist, and this is going to be 14 events where each event is looking at different flora and showing them the value of it. So the first one is Balm of Gilead, which is balsam poplar, and giving the history of Balm of Gilead and its health benefits, etc. And by sharing the knowledge of the land-based products, plants in this case, the hope is that they'll go out on their own and do their own foraging. A lot of people aren't familiar with how to tell the difference between a balsam poplar and an aspen, or a spruce and a pine, or whatever. So by sharing knowledge through programming about nature, then as an impetus for them to go out more frequently on their own.
That's great. Thanks. I'm glad to hear that you're doing that for your population, because there's Environment UConn does that for families, but I haven't seen anything that targets elders and seniors. So that's really great. Kumanovic, you popped in the chat and you said experience is key. Can you explain what you mean? Oh, you've got develop a program that requires hunting. Yeah, so you really need somebody who knows how to navigate that, right? So do you, in your day camp programs or summer camp programs, do you bring in people that are knowledgeable about hunting and the land and things like that, or do you does that happen outside of recreation?
That is for a different program. It's Nunavut Harvesters program. That's Nunavut Harvesters program, and we're just Get Happy Summer Day Camp. So it's for a kids camp. If we're going to take them outside, we can only take them where we're around the perimeter of the community hall. But for the Nunavut Harvesters program, you could go to Iglilik Point or even go boating to go hunt walruses.
So you have different programs in your community that support, that still help people overcome some of those things and gain experience, especially maybe younger people that might not have adults or elders in their life that take them out, right? Maybe they don't have any aunties or uncles or things. So you would have programming that helps that, but you just not through recreation then.
Yep.
Awesome. Thank you. And Deanne, do you want to try once more, see if your volume's working?
Hi. Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good. So I would say when I came in UConn, I was so lucky. I got my board members, they exposed me to the nature. I remember Nancy Nagel, she used to take me to the, in the trails in the night, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the night. And I was really get exposed, and I started walking. Like, in India, I can't even expect to go in the forest like that, right? It's so dangerous. Like, there are so many animals, things are there. And here I really got exposed, and then they took me for a canoe trip and lots of, hiking trips in this. I would say, I would like to take all my friends, like, especially the immigrants, right? They're not used to this kind of, nature. They have lived in the cities, and they have went to work, and from work to home, right? And this is a great opportunity for all the immigrants, those who are coming here, to get really close to the nature, really feel the nature, right? So if I, I'll get a chance, and definitely I will take them for the lots of, the trails walk, or, maybe a canoe trip or a hiking trip, or doing a close to the nature anything. Yeah. Thank you.
That's great. Thanks so much for sharing that. And it just, again, illustrates how different our communities are, but how important it is to, work into what we do either in our own life or in the work that we do, opportunities to get outdoors. So I really appreciate everyone sharing everything today and jumping on the call. There's a couple more resources in the Explore More section that you might find helpful. So depending on what you do, there's a access to a free online course called Introduction to Risky Play. So again, that's free, especially if you work with kids. Nathan, it might be something to look at with your staff for your summer day camp program, or Kumanovic as well. And it's offered by the Child and Nature Alliance of Canada, and it was just released last year, so it's pretty new. And it talks about, how you manage that risky play or manage risk in outdoor play settings. And Kumanovic, I think that's what you were mentioning, that your program, you're kind of limited to where it's a little safer. The Child and Nature Alliance of Canada also offers lots of different program ideas for children. So this wraps up our second to last learning event for this cycle. a number of you on the call, or you've got the required learning activity due on Sunday, and then you have one more learning event, and you will have completed your certificate. I think that includes Trista, David, Kumanopic, Nathan, and Gian, Julianne, and Isabel. You guys have a few more to still go in the fall, but so exciting that we're winding down for the season, and you're almost have your certificates earned. So if you can take a few moments to complete the feedback survey that's in Activity 7, I would really appreciate it. And we do not have a conference call next week, because our last learning event, which is a really fun one, it's RS103, and it's about Arctic Winter Games and North American Indigenous Games, and then festivals across our communities. So that begins on May 8th. And if anyone is continuing their training with us in the fall, the schedule is on the website. So you can go to recnorth.ca and find the schedule. So thanks for joining. If you have any questions, please stay on the line after I stop the conference call recording. David, I think that we have a meeting lined up for in 15 minutes, so maybe you can just call me back, or I'll call you in 15 minutes. So that would be great. So I'm going to end the conference call recording. Thank you. Nakarmi, Kwana, Masicho, Merci, and have a